Track 14. The Passion draws closer for Mary, and Jesus visits Sabaya the prophetess.
Walking towards Engannim with John, Jesus notices a certain sadness with his beloved apostle and asks what has grieved him. John replies, "What makes me feel heavy, no, not heavy, what makes me feel old, is that I saw your mother weep. She did not tell me why she was weeping, and I did not ask her, although I felt inclined to do so. But I looked at her so much that she said, 'I shall speak to you at home.'" "What did she tell you?" asks Jesus. "She said to me, 'Let us do all our duty in the remaining months, even more than our duty, in order to be resigned later when he is no longer among us. We must have done more than our duty.' And I said, 'But is the Master really going away? He has still so much to do, and there will be time.'" Two large tears streamed down from her eyes, and she shook her head, saying, "The true manna, the living bread, will go back to the Father when man rejoices, savouring again bread made from new wheat. And then we shall be alone, John." In order to comfort her, I said, "A great sorrow, but we must rejoice if he goes back to the Father, because no one will be able to hurt him any more." And she said, moaning, "Oh, but before..." And I thought I understood. "We who love you are ready to fight and kill in order to defend you. Your enemies will soon be destroyed." And Jesus says, "Even if you were 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, of what avail would that be against the will of the Father? I must fulfill it." John, depressed, speaks no more. Sometime later, Jesus expresses his own sorrowful need to his apostles. "I am in need of my mother, and you need her too. What the Christ does not do with his word, mother does with her silence. What my power does not do, her purity does. Oh, my mother! Are you weeping, Master? Are you weeping? Oh, no, we will defend you. We love you. I am not weeping and afraid because of those who hate me. I am weeping because hearts are harder than jasper, and I can do nothing for many of them." Eliza, the elderly woman disciple of Jesus, is giving hospitality to Jesus and his apostles. In thanking her, Jesus says, "A woman is always a mother, and she knows how to do such things. And once she has understood, she is as good as a man with the power of her maternal kindness over and above." "Oh, how kind you are to us, Master," says Eliza, looking at Jesus so lovingly as if she were caressing him. "I am truthful, Eliza. We people of Israel, and we are not the only ones, are accustomed to look at and consider woman as an inferior being. No, her mission is destined to be carried out among veils and in dim light, without showy deeds or words. Everything takes place in her as if it were choked by a curtain, but she is not less strong or less capable than men. Even without remembering the great women of Israel, I tell you that there is a great strength in the heart of a woman, in her heart, as in the intelligence of us men. I tell you that the situation of woman is about to change with regard to customs, as well as with regard to many other things. And it will be just, because a woman will obtain grace and redemption, particularly for women, as I will do for all men. A woman? But how can you expect a woman to redeem? remarks Judas Iscariot with a mocking laugh. And Jesus says, I solemnly tell you that she is already redeeming. Do you know what redeem means? Of course I do. It is to remove from sin. Yes, but to remove from sin would not help much, because the opponent is eternal and he will begin to lay snares all over again. A voice from the earthly paradise, the voice of God, says, I will create enmity between you and the woman. She will crush your head and you will lay snares for her heel. Nothing but snares, because the woman will have in herself what defeats the enemy. She has been redeeming since she existed, an active, although concealed, redemption. She will soon come out in the presence of the world, and women will be fortified in her. Then Judas says, that you redeem, all right, but a woman who can? I cannot accept it, Master. Do you not remember Tobit, his hymn? Asks Jesus. Yes, but it deals with Jerusalem. Has Jerusalem any longer a tabernacle in which there is God? Can God, from his glory, be present at the sins consumed within the walls of the temple? Another tabernacle was necessary, a holy one, to be a star leading errant people back to the Most High. And that is accomplished in the co-redemptrix, who throughout ages will rejoice at being the mother of the redeemed. You shall shine with a bright light. All the peoples of the earth will prostrate themselves before you. The nations will come to you from afar, bringing gifts, and will worship the Lord in you. They will invoke your great name. Those who will not listen to you will be among those cursed, and blessed be those who will gather around you. You will be happy in your children, because they will be the blessed ones gathered near the Lord. That is the true hymn of the co-redemptrix, and the angels who see are already singing in heaven. The new heavenly Jerusalem begins in her. Oh, yes, that is the truth. The world is unaware of her, and the dull-minded rabbis of Israel do not know her. Jesus is engrossed in his thoughts. But who is he speaking of? The Iscariot asks Philip, who is beside him. Before the latter replies, Eliza, who is putting some cheese and black olives on the table, says rather harshly, He is speaking of his mother. Don't you understand that? I never knew that she is mentioned by the prophets as a martyr. Only the Redeemer is mentioned, says Judas. Then Eliza says, Do you think that there is only the torture of the flesh? And don't you know that that is nothing for a mother compared with the torture of seeing her son die? Does your mind not tell you that a mother would suffer for torture and death 10 times rather than hear her son moan? Man, you are a man and you are learned. I am only a woman and a mother, but I tell you that you are more ignorant than I am, because you do not even know the heart of your mother. Oh, you are offending me, Judas says. No, I am old and I am giving you advice. Let your heart be wise, and you will avoid tears and punishment. do that if you can. The apostles, in particular Judas Thaddeus, James of Zebedee, Bartholomew, and the Zealot, cast sidelong glances at one another. Jesus, still preoccupied, does not hear anything. Jesus is taken by some scribes to visit Sabaya, a prophetess, who has not seen Jesus before. Although he seems unrecognizable among those with him, Sabaya says in a low voice, I see in the man who is concealed in the man. Holy is the man, but my knee bends before the Holy of Holies enclosed in the man. Her voice becomes loud again and imperious, like a command. Look at your king, O people of God. Become acquainted with his face. The beauty of God is before you. The wisdom of God has taken a mouth to teach you. It is no longer the prophets, O people of Israel, who speak to you of the unnameable one. It is he himself. To do that, he has become incarnate in a womb, in the womb of an Israelite woman, greater in the eyes of God and of men than any other woman. She stole the heart of God with one only of her throbs of a dove. Her spirit fascinated the Most High, and of her he made his throne. She is the perfect maid of God, and serves him without sinning. Entirely pure, innocent, and beautiful, she is the beautiful star of God. She is the ark herself. On the muddy waters of the earth, covered with the flood of sins, she sails and saves, because those who enter in her find the Lord. She is silent, and in her silence she speaks and acts. She does not advise to fight. She does not urge to slaughter. She sheds no blood, but her own most chosen blood with which she made her son. Unhappy mother, sublime mother, the fire of God descended into the calyx of the sweet lily, and the womb of woman contained and carried the power, the wisdom, and the love of God. Glory to the woman. Sing her praises, O women of Israel. The woman becomes silent, as if her voice were exhausted. The scribes say, she's mad, she's mad. Make her keep quiet. And Jesus says, I cannot. There is no spirit in her but God's, and God does not eject himself. Then, without looking at anybody in the face, but he seems to be speaking to himself, Jesus says, the woman will crush the head of the serpent. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son who will be called Emmanuel. A shoot will spring from the stock of Jesse. A flower will come up from this root, and the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. That woman is my mother. Scribes, out of respect for your knowledge, remember and understand the words of the book. The scribes do not know what to reply. As his public life is drawing to a close, Jesus says to John, Before long I shall have evangelized for 3 years. I have told the crowds what they were to be told. By now, whoever wants to love and follow me has the necessary elements to do so with certainty. The others, some will be convinced by facts. The majority will turn a deaf ear even to facts. I will very often withdraw, collecting my thought in prayer and preparation. And when I do not pray, I will devote myself to you all. John, as from this moment, I ask you to devote yourself very much to the women disciples, and in particular to my mother. My Lord, but what can I give your mother that she does not already possess in abundance, and so plentifully as to have what she can give us all? Your love, says Jesus. Imagine that you are a second son for her. She loves you, and you love her. You have one only love uniting you, your love for me. I, the son of her body and of her heart, shall always be more and more absent, engrossed in my occupations. And she will suffer because she knows. She knows what is about to happen. You must comfort her, so that she may be able to weep on your heart and be consoled. You know my mother. You have lived with her. But there is a difference between doing so as a disciple who loves his master's mother with reverential love and doing so as a son. I want you to do so as a son, that she may suffer a little less when she no longer has me. Lord, are you going to die? You are speaking like one who is about to die. You are grieving me. I have told you all several times that I must die. I strive to remember your words always, but this one is so grievous. And Jesus says, you do not even know exactly how great it will be and how monstrous. So great that it stuns you like a weight falling on your head from a height. And yet it is so. I shall die soon, and my mother will be left alone. I will die with a drop of sweetness in my ocean of sorrow if I see you as a son for my mother. Oh, my Lord, if I am able, I will do it. I will watch with the heart of a son. What can I give to comfort her if she loses you? How shall I manage? You must pray very much during this period. I will keep you a good deal with me and with my mother. John, you are our peace, and you will be so even then. Do not be afraid, John. Your love will do everything. Jesus has raised Lazarus from the dead, and the hostile reaction from his enemies results in his withdrawal to the Samaritan town of Ephraim. Mary and the women disciples come to be with Jesus, and Mary voices her appreciation to an elderly Mary of Jacob who has given Jesus hospitality, although grieving herself at the loss of 3 sons and 7 daughters. Mary says, you have been good to my son. He told me how good you have been. Let me kiss you to tell you how grateful I am to you. I have nothing to give you as a reward except my love. I am poor too, and I also can tell you that I no longer have a son because he belongs to God and to his mission. Our Lady is kind, but she is already broken-hearted. All the apostles look at her compassionately. When it is time to leave Ephraim, and in the presence of 2 of his disciples, Jesus says yet another of his many goodbyes to his mother. Goodbyes are always sad, mother, particularly when one does not know that an end is the beginning of something more perfect. It is the sad consequence of sin, and it will remain even after forgiveness. But men will bear it with greater courage, as they will have God as their friend. You are right, Jesus, but there is a sorrow that God lets us relish, although he is the most fatherly friend there can be. He is such to me. Oh, God is good, so good. I should not like James and John or anybody else to be scandalized by my tears. God is good. He was always good to poor Mary. I have repeated that to myself every day since I was able to think. And now I say so every hour, every moment. He gave you to me, a poor girl elevated to mother of his incarnate word. And the joy of being able to call you son, my adored Lord, is so great that no tear should drop from my eyes, whatever the torture may be. But I am a poor woman, son. You are my creature. And which mother can refrain from weeping when she knows that her creature is hated? Son, help your maidservant. The time was still remote. Now it is here. I perceive it. Help me, Jesus, my God. If God allows me to suffer like this, it is for a good purpose. And may he be blessed for that always. But help me, Jesus, help me, all of you. And with the two other disciples who are present, Jesus says, let us say the prayer, the four of us, who love you with all our hearts. Mother, here I, your son, and John and James, who love you as if you were their mother. Our Father, who art in heaven. And Jesus, guiding the little chorus of the three voices that follow him in a low tone, says all of the Lord's Prayer, stressing certain sentences such as, Thy will be done, lead us not into temptation. He then says, The Father will help us to do his will, even if our weakness of human beings is such that we think we are not able to do it. And he will not lead us into the temptation of thinking that he is not so good, because while we drink of this bitter chalice, he will send his angel to wipe our embittered lips with heavenly comfort. Jesus is holding by the hand his mother, who has bravely struggled with her tears. The two apostles are beside them. John is near Mary, and James of Alphaeus is near Jesus, and they are deeply moved.